I just find it fascinating that so many of the issues that are out there right now are based on this false notion that men and women are completely interchangeable.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I mean, all these really hot-button issues are based on some confusion about where men and women are equal, in what terms are they equal, and then, you know, most importantly, how are we different, and is that difference a bad thing? Is it a good thing? You know, what does God have to say about these differences, and, you know, how should the Christian think about these differences? So I am so excited to come to this conference and talk about these issues, which animate so much of our political and social and cultural discourse, and also the things we struggle with in the church as well.
You can meet and hear Molly Ziegler-Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We've come here tonight to support a man that we believe loves you and loves this country, Senator Marco Rubio. You're not supposed to clap in a prayer.
I actually don't know why they treat abortion like a sacrament. They really think it is an important thing to have the right to kill unborn children.
The idea that religions can just be nudged and altered along by the power of the state is an astoundingly stupid statement.
The church is a hospice, not a hospital trying to make us better. It's not a school trying to teach us. It's a hospice that's trying to prepare us to die.
Missouri dairy farmers love Issues Etc.
Now, there's such a thing as painting yourself into a corner. That's a pretty vivid picture of someone who has not thought about the implications of what they're doing until it's too late. They've painted themselves into a corner. And the pro-choice forces in the United States, I think that typifies a lot of what's going on with them right now. In the name of reproductive rights, in the name of the sovereignty of a woman's choice, they are willing to approve, they're willing to, well, kind of abandon reason and approve things if they feel like not approving them would jeopardize the sovereignty of a woman's reason and choice. And there's a great case, actually it's a terrible case, but it's a good example of that very thing before us this week. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon. It's the 16th of April. For the next half hour or so, we'll be talking with Holly Scheer about the first case, a first woman in the U.S. convicted of feticide. That's infanticide. Terrible story to tell, but it needs to be told. We'll also discuss Word Faith teacher Creflo Dollar and his particular view of the American dream. And a little bit later, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us, host of the weekly radio talk show called Redeemer Theological Academy. We'll be doing our series with him, Christ in the Old Testament. Genesis 28 is where we'll find ourselves, right there at the foot of Jacob's ladder. Holly Scheer is a regular guest. She's a pastor's wife, a married mother of four children in Burns, Wyoming. She's author of recent columns for The Federalist titled Abortion Supporters Defend Dumping a Live Baby in a Dumpster, and another titled Creflo Dollar Embodies American Evangelicalism's Excess. Holly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me.
What is this term feticide supposed to mean, and are you comfortable with it?
Sure. Feticide, especially in Indiana, where this case was, is intentionally terminating a pregnancy with any goal other than producing either a live birth or to remove an already dead baby. And I am very comfortable with the charge in this case.
What about the term? I mean, it seems to be they're trying to split hairs between feticide and infanticide.
The difference being mostly whether the death happened during a pregnancy or after the birth. Infanticide would be if you killed an already born baby.
Okay, so tell us and this is a gruesome story, but it has to be told, the story around the case of Purvi Patel.
Sure. Purvi Patel is a woman from Indiana. She is of Indian descent, and she found herself pregnant. She had an affair with a married man, and for whatever reason, they decided they did not want a baby. And she then procured drugs from overseas. She took them at home, and she ended her pregnancy. And She initially said she thought she was very, very early along. She was not. This was a viable baby. The baby was born alive. She decided instead of helping the baby in any way to wrap him up in trash bags and throw him away in a dumpster behind a restaurant. And then she took herself off to the hospital for medical care.
Now, how did the case proceed from that point, especially with regard to those who came to her defense?
At that point, the hospital obviously could tell she had just given birth. They went out, they found the baby. The baby at that point was deceased. He was not savable. And then this became a women's rights issue. And women's rights is obviously a euphemism for abortion and birth control. It became that if only access to abortion was better, she wouldn't have had to do this. Or if only access to birth control was better, she never would have become pregnant. And she has really become a figurehead that they're trying to put her up as this sympathetic face for access to abortion would have saved all of this heartache. She shouldn't be in prison. There's a petition up to the White House to pardon her completely.
Is it that the advocates of so-called women's rights were really talking about kind of layers and layers of euphemisms, reproductive rights? Let's just the advocates of abortion on demand, they are actually defending her, the acts that led to her conviction?
They absolutely are. They're saying that when you restrict abortion, that it forces women to make choices like this, that they're not baby incubators, and she should have had the right at any point to end this pregnancy however she wanted, and that prosecuting her is this terrible slippery slope that is eventually going to make women who've had miscarriages or stillbirths in trouble. And that's obviously totally fallacious.
Are they in a way here then, and I'm just wondering about the reasoning, they are allowing a one-to-one comparison between a woman going into an abortion clinic, getting a surgical abortion, which is entirely legal in this country, sad to say, and a woman self-aborting the child, then while the child is still alive, throwing the baby in a dumpster. They're saying that's a one-for-one comparison, and both of them ought to be permissible because the woman has decided that's how she wants to end the life of her baby.
Right. They are contesting at points whether the baby was actually alive. The abortion supporters are. They're trying to throw up some roadblocks on that. Maybe the baby was actually stillborn. They're ignoring the medical examiner did a whole series of tests to determine whether this was a stillborn baby or a baby who was born alive and then died. And one of the tests is from the 17th century. It's called a lung float test. They remove the baby's lungs and they see whether they float. And the premise behind it is lungs that float have oxygen. And that is the test they're really taking contention with, and they're ignoring everything else. He also detected oxygen. He detected blood flow, the weight of the lungs, which is consistent with a live birth. So what they're trying to do is focus on one thing and ignore all of the other evidence, that this is about a dead baby, is their contention. And our contention is this is about a live baby who could have lived, who should have lived.
So this brings us back around to why you say you are perfectly comfortable with the charges and the conviction here of feticide or infanticide against Purvi Patel.
Yes, because the fact of the matter is she took a healthy pregnancy. She took a pregnancy that was long past the point where baby could have lived. She had the option of, you know, waiting longer and delivering the baby, or I guess begging a doctor to deliver early. She had options here other than murdering her child. And so she was charged for taking a viable baby, ending the pregnancy, and then hucking him out. And so I think it's perfectly acceptable to say, listen, you shouldn't have ended your pregnancy at home like this. And then you absolutely should not have taken a baby born alive and thrown him away and then gotten medical care for yourself.
What does it tell you about abortion rights advocates that they have elevated woman's choice to such a degree that they are willing to defend Purvi Patel's actions here?
It tells me that it's very sad, and it's very just desperately sad, and it is a totally different viewpoint of the sanctity of life and what life actually is, that we can't all stop and come together and say, this was a baby, this was a human being, this was somebody who deserved and who needed care and protection. And instead of focusing on the person who murdered him and the unfortunate reality that she's now in prison, that we're going to focus on her rights being violated instead of the baby's rights, it's just, it's very disturbing.
Does it tell you something about their mindset with regard to making, in a sense, elevating a pregnant woman's choice to a place that no other consideration occupies? I mean, these kind of things, a person's choice is not used in any other circumstance I can think of to justify murder.
No, it absolutely isn't. There is no other circumstance that comes to my mind where it's acceptable to take, you know, a voluntary action. Her life was not in danger by this baby. It's not even a case of self-defense.
The baby was already born.
Yes, he absolutely was.
You've also written about Creflo Dollar, who has been recently in the news. Creflo is famous for being kind of one of those high-flying, literally high-flying televangelists, and he recently was petitioning his people to pay for a new private jet. What have you observed recently?
Yeah, he had a jet previously, I guess, and he had some sort of incident on a runway. It ran off, it wrecked, and then he decided that what God really wanted out of that circumstance was a new Gulfstream jet.
What concerns you about this, about the entire story of Creflo Dollar here?
First, it's very predatory. A lot of people who follow the prosperity theology that he espouses don't necessarily have a lot of material wealth themselves, and that's why it's so attractive. If you follow this church, if you give to this church, God is going to bless you with health, with wealth. And so he's taking people who often don't have this spare money, they're throwing it at him, and he's using it to buy a jet. This is not money that's coming into a church to bless our neighbors, to help spread the gospel. It's coming in so he doesn't have to ride coach in a normal plane.
You call this a theology fit for rich, unpersecuted Westerners. What do you mean by that?
This theology does not really thrive in the persecuted church. When you're talking about people who are being martyred for their faith, when you're talking about places where you can't even openly own a Bible, you're not going to be sending, you know, your $300 to some TV preacher. It's really something that rose to prominence in America, and fortunately, it seems like it's ebbing a little bit here. Unfortunately, it looks like we're exporting it to Asia, and they don't really need that right now.
It kind of raises the question, is the American dream, as it's usually couched, especially as it's magnified by guys like Creflo Dollar, that everyone not only has the right to try and be wealthy, Creflo seems to say everyone has a divine right to be wealthy. What's the problem here? Is it the American dream?
You know, I think the American dream is supposed to be about everybody had a chance to come from nothing and become something. And in light of that, he has achieved the American dream. He came from very small beginnings and, you know, he's got this massive ministry now. But what he's losing out on that is he's really massacring the gospel in favor of that. The gospel isn't about money. The gospel isn't about, you know, having a flashy car, a plane. The gospel is about salvation and forgiveness, and it's about Jesus. And Jesus is totally lacking in this.
Holly Shear is a pastor's wife, a married mother of four children in Burns, Wyoming. She's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Abortion Supporters Defend Dumping a Live Baby, and an article for The Federalist titled Creflo Dollar Embodies American Evangelicalism's Excess. You can read both of these at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Holly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, it's Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be at the foot of Jacob's ladder, finding Christ there in the ladder, in the stone, Jacob's seed, all over the place. Stay tuned.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
What do lay people owe their pastors? I've written an article in the latest issues, etc. journal titled, What Hearers Owe Their Pastors, Receive the Gift, and you can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Jim Pierce's journey from Pentecostalism, fundamentalism, and atheism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
T-shirts, shorts, sun. Get in shape this spring at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois. Arch Fitness offers adult boot camps on weekday evenings and on weekday and Saturday mornings. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Get A-Fit this spring at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.